You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I'm your host, Adam Miller, and today we are joined by Mac Peer, who's written a book called A Disruptive Gospel: Stories and Strategies for Transforming Your City. It talks about how to reach a city for the sake of reaching the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm really excited to be joined by him. Mac, thank you so much for being a part of the many voices for that one message.
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me here. Yep.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself and what kind of led into this book as a whole? You're a resident of New York City. Tell us a little bit about the challenges and the ministry that you have there that has kind of fueled your passion for reaching your city and your community with the gospel.
Sure. Well, my wife, Mari, and I moved to New York City in 1984. I was on staff with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. At the time, I work with a staff team on 15 campuses in the New York area. And when we moved to New York in 1984, the city was very violent. It was financially bankrupt, and parts of New York were really quite underchurched. And in 1984, there was an incident where a guy by the name of Bernard Goetz, a German guy, shot five unarmed African Americans on the subway, and that unleashed a decade of racial violence in New York that culminated in 1994 with 2,400 murders, or about 8 murders a day for a year. And against the backdrop of that violence, we began to bring churches together to pray together in 1988. And over the next 30 years, we involved about 2,000 churches and 250,000 people in United Prayer. We call it Concerts of Prayer for New York. And we really saw two macro answers to prayer. One was the murder rate declined by 70% in 5 years from 1995 to 2000. And then secondly, partially as a result of my friendship with Tim Keller, we started the Church Planting Alliance in 2003. And we saw Christianity in Manhattan grow 300% in 20 years from 1989 to 2009. And that really was the beginning of a gathering we call Movement Day. And we've been doing that for the last 8 years. And the book really grew out of my interaction with leaders in 11 cities around the world, just sharing the stories of what God was doing in their cities. The book begins with the story of New York and then a little bit about Dallas. And then it goes on to 9 other cities around the world.
Hmm. Well, this is a pretty remarkable thing, because if you think about what many people are saying about New England and the Northeast, where we're prominently based, is that this is the post-Christian world, and yet you're starting to see ministries like you're talking about and other ministries that are rising up against what seems to be that opposition and accomplishing really great things, not just within the church, but within their communities.
Yeah, one of the things that's happening in the Northeast and parts of urban North America, urban Europe, is the great renewal, revival of Southern Hemisphere Christianity is migrating into U.S. cities, European cities like New York and London and Boston, where in New York, over 90% of the active Christians are either minority or migrant. And Southern Hemisphere Christianity has brought an enormous amount of vibrancy to these cities in the Northeast and in the Mid-Atlantic, cities like New York, Washington, D.C., I think Philadelphia to a little bit lesser extent. But there's some amazing things that have happened even in the last 30 years.
Tell us a little bit about what many kind of the prognosticators, I guess you could say, would say is taking place, and then how what is actually taking place under the surface can be an encouragement to the church and to believers about what God is actually doing within our communities.
Well, there are some trends that are concerning around the world. In the Western Hemisphere, we think that the average age for Christians is 55. The average age for Buddhists is 32, and the average age for Muslims is 25. So in the West, Christianity has been a bit of an aging movement. We are concerned just not about the speed of urbanization, the fact that there are 3 million people moving into sizable cities every week around the world. So these are a couple challenges that we face. But we are encouraged where we see what we call signs of hope in various cities. Like, for example, in New York, we have a younger leader, Adam Durso, who's been asked by the mayor of New York to create a faith-based millennial network. In the city of Dallas, we helped a young leader, Grant Skeldon, who's now, I think, 26, get started in planting an organization called Initiative that has younger leaders, and they've had a couple thousand younger leaders involved. So we're seeing several signs of hope in the context of very challenging environments.
You talk a lot about prayer and the importance of that, and the, kind of that as a bedrock for what is taking place. Why do you think prayer is so important in that local context?
Well, you know, what we recognize early on is that the challenges of cities, the challenges of many of our communities are far too great for us to resolve in kind of our own strength or ingenuity. And we really believe that the real power of the gospel is in the power of the unity of the church. And what we found by bringing groups to pray together over the last 30 years is that trust grows between churches exponentially more quickly by praying together than anything else that we could do. We've been taking pastors away for three-day retreats every January for 28 years, and that really has been the foundation for many of the spiritual movements, a lot of the projects that get birthed out of all that. And we really believe that spiritual movements really grow at the speed of relationship, and the best way to grow a relationship with someone is to spend time praying with them.
Mm. Yeah, I think prayer is really important, but yet it often doesn't cross a church to church. You can pray with your members in your church and members of your own congregation, but how have you seen this ability to bring churches together under the auspice of prayer?
Well, we've used the model that Jonathan Edwards created in 1747. He created this phrase that he called concert of prayer. It really began in New England, where churches would gather once a quarter to pray together for the region. And we've been doing this since 1988, where either on the National Day of Prayer or some other time during the year, we'll invite multiple churches to gather. It takes a little bit of organization and promotion. But what we do is we gather people for an evening. It does require a little bit of skill to facilitate an evening with very diverse cultures in the room. But we will typically take a passage like a John 17 or an Ephesians 3 and then just give people a guided experience of worship, of praying for the church, and then praying for the society and the world. And it's divided into what we call movements throughout the evening, and then a challenge at the end for people to continue on in their own personal prayer life, but also to commit to pray with each other. We've also utilized prayer walks pretty effectively for the last 13 years or so. Typically, the first Saturday in June has been a day when churches prayer walk their community. We get people out of the building into the community so they can see what's going on in their own neighborhood and pray and then get involved with it.
You talk about a disruptive gospel. That's a pretty provocative title here. Tell us what you mean by it being disruptive.
Well, one of the things that we believe is that when Jesus came into the world, that was a very disruptive act. This idea that God could become man in the incarnation was very disruptive, and we feel like disruption has to take place because the status quo is unacceptable. The percentage of people that are outside the faith, the percentage of people that are in poverty, the percentage of people that are really struggling with life, all of that is unacceptable, which is why we need there to be something disruptive, and that's why we use the word movement, is because the status quo isn't acceptable. And we believe that a movement is taking place when the Christian population is growing faster than the general population, when Christians are finding themselves in positions of cultural influence, and when Christians are seeing the measurable progress against the social challenges within their own city, whether it's education or employment or poverty, whatever that might be.
And as you think about the challenges that are facing the church ahead, it does require that there needs to be a little more focus as to what we're doing, right? This is what you're writing about. This is a gearing of our attention and focus as to all of the ways that it's been suggested to us that things are getting worse. You're trying to say that this is a means in which we need to target and focus more of our prayer, more of our attention, and more of our focus to make an impact, correct?
Yeah, so one of the things that we really talk about is the importance of having good research, good understanding of our community. My observation about most churches and leaders in churches is that very few people understand the demographics of their own community. How many people live in the community? How many people go to church in the community? What are the indices of our community? What percentage of children are graduating? What is the unemployment rate? We live in an international context, and what percentage of people don't know how to speak English? Because we think that informed leaders will make better decisions in that regard. So that's a really high priority, is to be informed, to be prayerful, to be collaborative with other churches and other groups. We really believe that every city or community is an ecosystem of churches and agencies that can work together to bring about change, and that the vibrancy of the gospel in a city or community is in proportion to the depth of unity between different members of that same ecosystem. So that's what we're really passionate about in bringing that together.
Hmm. This is working in a context like a city, in the urban area, where there is a lot of diversity and there is a large community. But many of our listeners are out in the suburban areas or even out in the country. What is there in this book, and what is there in what you're doing that can translate into their context?
I would say two things. I think just from an educational standpoint, it's helpful to understand cities around the world, because cities impact us whether we live in them or we don't live in them, because cities really create culture. They export culture. Five of the six major media outlets in the world are right in Manhattan. So Manhattan influences the world whether a person lives there or not. But whether we live in urban, suburban, or rural, we typically live in a place where there will be multiple churches. And it's important for the vibrancy of the gospel that the community around the church see that the churches love each other, that they work together, they're committed to each other, that there's a relationship there. Because at the end of the day, we believe that when Jesus looks at a city or a community, he doesn't see Baptist and Lutheran and Presbyterian. He really only sees two groups, people that know Jesus and people who don't. And those of us that know Jesus are really commanded to demonstrate our unity. It gives credence to our faith. It's our best apology to an unbelieving world in the prayer of Jesus in John 17.
Now, this is an area where I have seen more and more churches coming together for that very purpose, because they're seeing that whatever differences they might have, it's so much more different than the challenges they're facing in the world and the people that are pressing against the Christian church and this kind of post-Christian, this post-evangelical community of the Northeast, and particularly here in New England. And so that's driving them together. Have you seen something that is causing these churches to recognize the importance of coming together for the sake of their community?
Yes, there's been really good leadership in different cities and communities. Like in Boston, you have Emmanuel Gospel Center that's been doing this for 75 years. You have groups throughout New York and Philadelphia and D.C. that have really worked hard at bringing groups together. The prayer movement that goes back to the 1980s has really done a good job of bringing diverse leaders and churches together to pray together. And I think it's been increasingly impactful over time. We've seen that in New York, where leaders start spending time together and they start doing projects together. One of the things that grew out of the prayer movement, I took about 150 leaders to East Africa, look at the AIDS pandemic, between 2002 and 2012. Leaders went there and came back and ended up sponsoring 11,000 children, that impacted 600,000 people living in those communities. And that was really rooted in leaders praying together, but then learning about some of the great challenges around the world.
Mm. Your book here talks about kind of transformations that have taken place and tells stories. What do you think is the power in that, in giving these illustrations, giving these examples of where prayer has been effective? Our theme for this year as a radio ministry is witness, and I think it kind of plays into what we've been talking about on the radio this year, but tell us a little bit about why stories and these strategies have come together in a unique way.
Yeah, I think stories really are the modern-day language of transformation. I mean, everybody has a story. Every city has a story. One of the stories I talk about a lot is from the city of Mumbai, which is like Hollywood meets Wall Street in India. And in Mumbai, you have the largest red light district in the world, where you have 400,000 women. And the average woman has 11 customers a day for a decade. And then you've got groups like Mumbai Teen Challenge, Set Beautiful Free. We've got these incredible missionaries that are working with a number of individuals and really rescuing people out of that lifestyle. And I mean, it's incredible, the courage, it's incredible, the impact, the need is overwhelming. But we need to be inspired by people that have really laid down their lives to make a difference for people that are really vulnerable.
Mm. This is an area where I think a lot of people need to be encouraged, because I think a lot of people have been praying on their own for a long time, praying for movements to take place, and not seeing fruit. Maybe even if all the information they're getting is from mainstream media, the kind of the prognosticators that are saying that how bad things are, they're probably getting really discouraged in their prayer. What would you like to say to them to challenge them or to revitalize their efforts?
I think, I mean, what Jonathan Edwards said in the 18th century, he said the two keys to revival are intercession and information. And I think it's important to be connected to information sources that can provide stories and impact. We have a website called movementday.com, and that has stories from cities all over the world. This book, A Disruptive Gospel, has stories. The Luis Palau Association has created a website called the City Gospel Movement, and they've got lots of stories on there. I think we just have to work hard at doing a good job of storytelling and what God is doing around the world, particularly where there are really good things happening among young people. That's really important. The Lausanne movement has something called the Young Leader Gathering that met a couple years ago in Jakarta, Indonesia, and great young leaders that emerged out of that. The Urbana Missions Conference, I think this is an Urbana year. That's been one of the greatest sources of recruiting missionaries, really, for the last almost 75 years. That was where I got started in 1979. So there really are some good efforts that have been around a long time, some more recent. But I think if we can do a good job of telling stories, we can really see some amazing things happen.
As we think about the difficult aspects of doing ministry in New England and the Northeast, and you look at what is actually taking place and the movements that you've talked about and the effort to put prayer first and the stories that you tell in your book, as well as the prayers you put at the end of each chapter, what is your hope for readers of this book and for listeners of this conversation? What is your hope for them that will motivate them and inspire them to be a part of what God is doing in the kingdom of God?
Yeah, my biggest hope is always that God will raise up more leadership. You know, whenever God gets ready to do something, he raises up a leader, whether it's in a local church or in a community or a city. And God really wants to use us to take the initiative and to be a part of making a change. So my hope for people that are reading the book or listening is that they'll make the effort to find out what's going on, if there is something going on in their community or their city, and if there isn't, to initiate, to get to take the first step in getting a group together and to get started. People want to be led, and so my hope is that this can be a catalytic conversation or idea for people.
Mm. You know, the focusing on the cities, for a lot of people, they're out in the rural areas, and there's a disconnect in mindset. But really focusing on the cities is essentially what the Apostle Paul did in writing to the cities that would then have the influence in their surrounding culture. So even for people that are outside the cities, you would say that come in or to pray and to find those groups where they gather together for the sake of reaching that larger area, the larger demographic. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, if we're people of faith, regardless of where we live, city, suburban, or rural, if we're going to be thoughtful Christians, we need to understand, that God loves the whole world, and the fact is that the majority of the world now lives in sizable cities. So whether we live there or not, we need to share God's concern for that. And I think that we can be engaged with cities, whether it's by praying for cities, perhaps attending specific events or outreaches, or supporting something that's going on in a city, because it will always take a global commitment to impact what's happening in cities, whether that's praying, educating, resourcing, whatever that looks like. So I think that's important that we be conversant with the opportunities and challenges of cities.
As we're thinking about this, and as we're talking about really the ministry that you've had in New York City for so many years, I always like to ask the author how this book has influenced them. But since this book comes really out of the growth of many years and work and experience, tell us a little bit about where you've seen your whole life change that is really putting into your heart and your whole being into this book as an effort of what you've been doing for the past several decades.
Well, I grew up in a town of 600 people. And part of our story is that I say that I grew up with a dual prejudice. I grew up 16 miles from an Indian reservation in South Dakota. My mom grew up in the South, where there's a natural prejudice against African Americans. And part of our journey as we've gone from rural Midwest to urban New York is that God has really transformed us in terms of our view of other people, our love for other cultures, appreciation for what God is doing, particularly in other kinds of churches. New York City, for example, we have 2,500 Hispanic churches in New York. It's a very powerful movement. The first family that took us in when we moved to New York in 1984 was African American. And what we realized is that there's nothing more powerful this side of heaven than being radically loved by someone radically different. And that's really been our personal journey. When Paul prays in Ephesians 3 about only being able to understand the love of Christ as we know it with all the saints, and then he commands in Ephesians 4:3 that we make every effort to keep the unity of the bond of peace, that we really have an important mandate related to the unity of the church and what God is doing. And I think God's really honored our earnest commitment in 1979 as college juniors to go anywhere in the world that God would send us, and it brought us to New York, and we've been here for 34 years, and it's just been a real journey of God's faithfulness over the last 40 years, so we're just thankful to have been a part of it.
Mm. We've been talking with Mac Pierre. He's the author of A Disruptive Gospel, Stories and Strategies for Transforming Your City, a great lesson on the power of prayer and the power of a testimony, a witness for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Mac, thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing all of these stories from your book, but being a part of our program and the many voices for that one message.
Great. Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.